The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour 1 Podcast.
Hey, very pleasant. Good afternoon. A new week and a new month has arrived. Yes, it is May. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. And our first topic today seems like where we left you on Friday, but the world of sports is still buzzing about the NFL draft, and in particular, the number of players from that certain conference that you may have heard of breaking another record. SEC. Man, somebody needs to write a book about the SEC's dominance and how that conference can beat yours. SEC has set a major NFL draft record this weekend. It is just simply unbelievable when you get inside the numbers. Look at that. Alabama, of course, with 10. Ohio State, that's not too surprising. Those first four, three of the first four were in the playoffs last year. Where's Clemson? What happened to them? Are they slipping? Florida at 8, LSU at 7, Kentucky, how about that? Any surprise that Mark Stoops is doing it the right way? 65 players taken, all in all. And, you know, again, I'm not suggesting they change the name of the NFL draft to the SEC Invitational, but it seems that way, doesn't it? Anyway, more on that in a couple of minutes. Let's talk about Bama, who was a big topic as well. You know, we had Cecil Hurt on the other day, and he laid out the facts about the Miami team from 01 to 03 with 13 first-round picks and 26 overall. How about Bama, 19 to 21, 29 and 13? I'll take this out. I'll take the Alabama team over that team, especially the fans. Is this the pinnacle of the Saban dynasty? We'll have to talk about that, and we will throughout our program. Let's get to some more headlines here before we get to your phone calls. JT Daniel. Remember when we weren't sure whether he'd ever play? Fox Sports projects JT Daniels as the number one overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft. And please call the paramedics. Mike Griffith just had a coronary. Tim Tebow, remember him? Is his signing with Jacksonville a real possibility? Urban Meyer lamented over the weekend that he is not crazy about the tight end room. They did take one from Ohio State. Tebow lives three doors down from Urban. You think they've had that conversation? And when he says it's a real possibility, does that mean it's a fait accompli? Headline. Stop me if you've seen this movie before. The Pac-12 is looking for a commissioner. Honk if you're interested in the job. The optics are bad, but there's still time to get it right. That according to our man, John Wilner. Would they be better just like going out on the LA freeway and just picking the first car that comes by? Anyway, inside 27 months of playoff expansion talk, where are we on the playoff? That is a Ross Dellinger exclusive, and he will join us later in the program. I mentioned Griff. He will also be with us as soon as he gets off the floor after reading about JT Daniel. Mike Griffith joins us in about 30 minutes. John Wilner, Ross Dellinger, and who knows who else could possibly show up. We always leave a little bit of room. Anyway, when you think of one of my favorite publications, the Sports Business Journal, very prestigious, that one of their biggest moments of the year is in May and June. I think it's in June this year when they announced the Sports Executive of the Year. And how about that? Greg Sankey of the SEC mentioned as one of the top candidates. So these are all the finalists. You'll also see the president of ESPN in that group. And you see Mark Cuban? No. Anyway, Mark's the guy that's producing the show today. That was an inside joke. Those are some pretty good candidates, and we'll talk to the commissioner a little bit later in the week about that and many, many other stories. Your phone calls are always welcome here. That's what we do. We take phone calls. 855-242-7285. Love to have you on board. Last week was very draft-centric. Today, we'll venture out into a couple of other areas. How about Dawson? Actually, not Dawson, but James starting us off in Georgia. Hey, James, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to tell you, my dad's a Tennessee diehard fan, and he's got H&R, and he just loves your show, watches it religiously. But my question
Hold on, James, what's his name?
His name is Charles Lahan. He's from Loudoun, Tennessee.
I know it well.
My dad. Yeah, Loudoun, Tennessee is where my family's from. We live in Columbus, Georgia. And my dad watches your show. I watch your show as much as I can, but religiously, just my mom and brother.
How is he doing?
He did a couple of tours in Vietnam. He's 78 years old, and he gets around better than me.
That's amazing.
And it's just, it's the willpower. You know, older people back in the day, if we live by their ways, everybody would live a lot longer.
Well, so you said his name is Charles, right?
Charles Lahan.
Well, you know, we all owe him a debt of gratitude for going someplace that was not the most popular destination back during that era, and for serving all of us bravely and courageously, and unfortunately having to deal with some of the after effects. But Charles, we're pulling for you. And you continue inspiring all of us, okay, my friend?
And one last question. I know you're busy. What is the status? Have you heard anything about I hope we don't lose our defense coordinator, Lanning. Have you heard anything about that, or is that just stuff flying around?
I have not heard much about it. I don't know how to answer you, though, because, I mean, I know what you're talking about, but anything I would offer you, right, it would just be an absolute guess.
Well, thank you for taking my call and letting me put that little bit in there about my dad, because he really loves your show. I mean, he just, you know, we just love listening to you now, because, you know, it just feels like a home program, if you know what I mean.
Well, James, thank you for saying that. We really appreciate it, and we hope he continues to deal with it. I mean, people don't realize, you know, war has casualties, and it's not always what you think. It's Agent Orange was a huge story of that generation, and I'm just glad to know he's doing well. Thanks so much. Let's continue with more calls. And where are we here? I'm going to learn how to hit these buttons eventually. How about Matt in Birmingham? Matt, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Matt, we're doing well. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I was just going to call in about you being from Birmingham. You know, the region's tradition is a big classic here in Birmingham. Was just out there and was going to get you to comment kind of on the pairings. Fred Couples got Charles Barkley and Brian Harrison, and then Nick Saban is going to be paired with Ernie Els. Was just going to kind of get your intel on both those pairings. What do you kind of look for? Is Nick going to be picking Ernie's brain? Is Ernie going to be picking Nick's brain? Or how do you see that kind of going down?
You know, interestingly, Nick Saban to me, probably wanted to play with Ernie. I mean, first of all, Nick Saban could play with anyone he wants, so I'm pretty sure he has to play with Ernie, because Ernie had a reputation on the radio tours having the smoothest swing on the PGA Tour. It was effortless. They called him the Big Easy. As far as Harsin, I say this with all due respect to my friend Charles Barkley, but I used to play golf. I don't play anymore, but I played golf with Charles probably two dozen times in my life, and it will take years off your life playing golf with Charles Barkley.
I agree. I can't wait. I just want to get your
I think
Nick Saban gets his pick.
Yeah, and you know, I think Harsin is playing with Bo too. And I think I read where Bubba Bussey is in that group, who's a great, he and Rick Burgess have, you know, the most popular morning show, in terms of, you know, non-sports in Birmingham. And it's a huge deal. Gene Hallman puts that tournament on every year and has had to deal with what everyone dealt with last year. And I saw the pairings, some of the pairings. See John Daly's back, and we will be interviewing all those people on Wednesday afternoon. So don't dare miss us Wednesday. We'll have Coach Saban and Barkley and Coach Harson and everybody who is playing in the tournament. We need a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. It's great to have all of you here, and we're continuing your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We'll start bringing the guests in here in a minute. Mike Griffith will be up just momentarily. Let's get to the calls. And Frank in Queens, New York. Hello, Frank.
Shabbat shalom, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to have you on.
Yeah, I love the observation you did about Bill Belichick over the weekend. And you're taking some flack from a lot of different sources. You never want to placate, and that's the kind of the Paul Feinbaum that I've grown to love over the years. I think your Bill Belichick observation is absolutely perfect. And the thing is, during the Kentucky Derby, NBC went in so far as to compare him to Bobby Baffert. Belichick has never won without Brady. And that's apparent. And people in New England have to stop getting drunk on chowder and understand that this guy's really not that great, you know?
Yeah, I was on ESPN Radio Friday morning, and my point really was about Mac Jones and going to New England. And I was simply talking about the media narrative that Bill Belichick always knows what he's doing. And I got into something which I think surprised people. And I just didn't come up with this out of the clear blue sky. I question, you know, where he is right now in his career by some of the people that he has working for him, especially his son, who would not get another job anywhere in the NFL if his name wasn't Steven Belichick. And I just feel like he's, you know, and you can say it's great that he's taking all these Alabama players, but to me, he's calling Nick Saban and Saban's saying, great, well, okay, that should work, but it's no guarantee that it will. That's not how you evaluate in the NFL. You use your own instincts.
But that's why everyone loves you, Paul. And because you do that, you do question the great Bill Belichick.
And I don't give to I don't care. I don't have anything against Bill Belichick. I mean, I'd be a moron not to acknowledge his success. But do I think he'll win another Super Bowl? No. I don't think he's going to win another Super Bowl.
You're absolutely right. And one more thing, you get a lot of flack too for ripping Nebraska. My father, he went to the University of Oklahoma, and he graduated, he went there in 1968, 69, right? Long time ago, but I've been following the Sooners a long time. And Oklahoma plays Nebraska this year in the Big Red game, right? A revival of the Big Red game. They are going to try to make it like they are on the same terms of Oklahoma. And Nebraska flat out sucks. And you've brought this up over and over again, and year in and year out, they make you look right. They make you look great because they're a joke. They're an absolute.
Yeah, no, you know, we had a guest on here a couple of months ago, years ago, I think, when Frost got the job and said he thought they would return to where they used to be. They're never returning to where they used to be.
No, Tom Osborne with that team. Did you know Tom Osborne?
I did meet Coach once or twice, yes.
Yeah, he's the reason why that – I'll let you go, but he's the reason why they were so good.
Well, he also – thank you, Frank. I mean, in fairness, Osborne replaced Bob Devaney, who was a legendary coach. And even afterwards, Solich did a pretty good job. They still fired him because he was only winning 10 games a year. I mean, first of all, Nebraska just doesn't mean anything to anyone outside of Nebraska. I've been to a game there. It's an experience, but they're yesterday's news. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's talk to Dawson, who is up next in Indiana.
Hey, Paul, you there?
I am. Thank you for the call.
Hey, this is Dawson out of Indiana. Hey, I just wanted to talk to you about a comment you had made, and it's about you said time's running out for Nick Saban and the Tide. I want to know how much time is left, and if they just won the championship, do you not think that the recruiting classes are still continuing to be great? Like, how much time and how many more championships do you think he's going to win?
Yeah, Dawson, that comment was made 2.5 years ago, and you make comments based on what you're seeing in the moment, and I was concerned about some of his coaches. Since then, Nick Saban has brought in an amazing staff, especially on the offensive side of the ball. He has ratcheted up his recruiting to a level that he has, I don't think, ever been at before. And most important, the development is better than it's ever been. So, I don't think the window is closing any longer. I think it really comes down to now, what Saban wants to do. And nobody knows the answer to that. Right now, the best intel I have is that he doesn't want to do anything else. Doesn't matter whether he's about to be 70 or 75. And as long as his health is good, he will continue to do that job. He's not going anywhere else at this point. There's nothing else that really interests him. So I think Nick Saban has defied time. I know a lot of people that are happy to see it. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let us check in with Tom, who is in Alabama. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Tom, we're doing great. Thank you.
I'm not going to talk about my heritage because you know my heritage. One guy got mad because I talked about my heritage, so I won't talk about my heritage no more.
What do you want to talk about?
Alabama's baseball team. And when Magnin played for Alabama, did they win a national championship?
No, I believe they came in second.
And who did he play for in the big leagues?
I believe he played for the Mets.
Okay.
He played there 35 years ago though, or longer, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I watch the show every day, and since I've been retired, this is how I'm a day. And I appreciate you doing such a good job, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, Tom, thank you. And if you want to talk about your heritage, feel free. There are no rules on this show. That's what gets us in trouble so often.
How you doing, Tim? Mr. Paul Feinbaum.
Matt, what is up with you?
I got my COVID-19 shot, my second one, Paul, and I wanted to talk to you about Texas A&M football, and I want to share some good news with you.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you got the shot, and that's really good news. Now maybe we can meet this fall.
Yes, we can. Well, the good news I want to talk to you about, Paul, I found a reading program called LearningRx. I'm going to take the test. They're going to test me and see where I'm at. It's going to help me go back to school, Paul.
Well, Matt, I don't want to sound like everybody's parent. But I will. Education is critically important. And I mean, I know there are always exceptions. And I know that Steve Jobs and Bill Gates have dropped out of Harvard. But they're the exceptions to the rule. You need to go to school.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Paul, coming from a good friend like you. And I want to talk about Texas A&M football, Paul. Paul, everybody keeps on saying Jimbo's a hack. He's a joke. He's never going to win a title at A&M. Longest Saban's there. Paul, I don't agree with that. Jimbo is not a hack. He's not a joke. He's a good coach. I believe he will win a national championship at Texas A&M. I believe he will challenge Nick Saban in the West this year. And I just don't get why people keep on bashing him when he went 9-1 still last year. I just wanted your thoughts and your opinion on it, Paul.
Listen, Matt, Jimbo Fisher and Kirby Smart are at the, just a half a layer, a level below Nick Saban in the SEC. And they both are extremely capable. I mean, it's possible A&M, could be a hair less than last year with Kellen Mond gone. I mean, when you're a four-year starter, that does matter. But on the other hand, we've seen Alabama win championships with first-year starters. It can happen. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. Speaking of quarterbacks, JT Daniels, a big conversation piece right now, and we're going to talk about the man who covers the Dogs, Mike Griffith, right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mike Griffith joining us. Mike, it's been too long. How are you, my friend? What's going on?
I've been good. Been good, Paul. How are you doing, man?
We're okay. Looks like life is slowly getting back to normal, and we just had a headline a minute ago that JT Daniels, and you heard us talk to Kirby the other day, is projected to be the number one pick in the draft. That's not setting the bar too high, is it?
Yeah, I don't know about projections right now. I mean, that's a long time off, obviously. I mean, think about it. At this time last year, we thought Jamie Newman or Dwan Mathis was going to be the starting quarterback at Georgia, and JT Daniels was a guy in the portal at Southern Cal that was the furthest thing from anybody's mind in the SEC, and now we see Dwan Mathis going to be the starting quarterback at Temple, and Jamie's off headed for the NFL, and now JT's the guy here. So a little early. But certainly with Todd Monken's offense, and when you look at Georgia's schedule, it certainly lends itself to what should be a really special year for JT in the offense.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because we are, the draft is now over, and we are entering the silly season of predictions and magazines and expectations. And I know not much has really changed other than the Pickens injury, but now that you've had a chance to catch your breath, and see the spring practice, and what are your takeaways as we head toward the summer and fall?
Well, I mean, it's the same questions. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that are bullish on Georgia. I think I've heard you say that, and a lot of the other top analysts out there. And listen, Georgia's loaded, right? This year they set a program record with 9 guys drafted. Next year they're going to have 11 or 12 guys drafted. They could have 4 or 5 guys in the first round. I mean, it's a loaded roster, right? Cyclically, this should be the year for Georgia. And I know every year you say that. That's a good thing. It's a good thing when you're an annual national championship contender, Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, Ohio State, right? That's not a bad thing to have 4 straight top 10 finishes. But it doesn't take away from the fact that Georgia's going to be very inexperienced in the secondary. Recent news, Major Burns, a safety backup, albeit, but a young, talented guy transferring out of Georgia. That makes 10 guys now that have left the program since the end of the 2019 season, either through transfer or via 4 guys drafted yesterday in the NFL draft, 2 of them in the top 33 picks. But the bottom line is there's a lot of youth in the secondary. You mentioned other than George Pickens. Well, I mean, he was only going to be the best receiver in the SEC. He's first round draft pick. When does George come back? That's a question. Is he back by next November? Could he provide a late lift? But until then, it's going to be more of a committee. I mean, George Pickens was going to be the go-to guy, Paul. He was going to be a 100-catch guy. So now George is going to have to use their tight ends more and their running backs more. Changes the offense a little bit.
Mike, as we zoom the camera back a little bit, not literally, but figuratively, you've covered a number of SEC schools in the past. You've lived in Alabama, covering Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia. I'm curious about the East. Moving Georgia off the table, because I think we both can conclude, or will conclude, that they will be the favorite. But what about Florida? I keep getting a lot of questions about, where exactly is this program now after what happened last year? It was good and bad.
Yeah, I think you got to give Dan Mullen a lot of credit. You know, he produced a first-round draft, two first-round picks with Kyle Pitts and Tony. And I saw Trask got picked in late in the second round. Good for him, going to a good place behind Brady and Tampa Bay. But I thought Mullen did a really nice job with his talent last year when Florida was engaged, obviously, after the SEC championship game. That's a heartbreaker, right? A lot of those kids cashed it in, and they kind of rolled over in the bowl game. But I was really impressed with how they played against Alabama. I don't think you can take that away from Florida. I thought their best game of the year was that loss to Alabama. I mean, it just sounds crazy to say that. But I like what Mullen does. But, you know, look, Dan Mullen's a guy that's serving a show-cause penalty right now. I mean, Florida's got some recruiting restrictions once teams are able to go back on the road. They've got a little bit hanging over them. You wonder if that's going to slow them down a little bit. You wonder if that'll damage their recruiting. But otherwise, I think Dan Mullen offenses are very exciting. I think he's proven that, you know, what he can do with tight ends and dictating matchups. Certainly, he was able to outmaneuver Georgia for one half a play. Georgia having lost their All-American safety. They were a little young back there. And you got to give Mullen credit. He schemed him up. So I think Florida is probably the number two team. But you know what? I'm not counting out Missouri. I know that sounds crazy, but you know, Eli Drinkwitz, this guy, he kind of had Missouri going a little bit last year. And every time we want to count Missouri out, it seems like they jump back into the mix, right? Probably a little early for Tennessee, for Heupel to kind of get anything going. He lost a lot there. In Kentucky, I wonder a little bit about a tough team, certainly developed a reputation in the trenches. But I almost think it's Florida by default. And I give, you know, Missouri that puncher's chance. And I certainly don't want to disrespect Kentucky.
Talking to Mike Griffith, Mike, let's flip it over and we'll move Alabama to one end because I think we can overdo that subject. But who challenges them? Is it LSU? Is it A&M? Is it someone we haven't given any thought to?
Yeah, I think A&M and LSU. I mean, I think LSU's got a lot of talent. You saw that when they went down and beat Florida at the Swamp, really derailed you know, Florida's chances for a college football playoff spot. And, you know, great quarterback play. We saw Max Johnson play that night. I was impressed with the talent that LSU has. Now, Paul, you and I talked about it. I remember the conversation last October when I told you that these off-the-field issues that were, you know, kind of in the shadows around Ed Orgeron and the program, I mean, they've really come to the forefront. And we have to see how that filters out. That can be a distraction. Certainly, that can hurt a program. So I don't necessarily think that LSU is out of the woods yet. We've got to see how they're able to manage the off-field, you know, issues that they've had with sexual misconduct cases. So I think that's kind of there still. And then, of course, A&M, I think Jimbo Fisher's recruited better and better and better. I know you rightly so, you mentioned losing a guy like Kellen Mond, and not always easy to replace a guy like that, right? We saw Georgia struggle without Jake Fromm. It took a little while for them to get comfortable there. So, but I like the talent there. And you know, the big question about Alabama is just what do they do with the RPO? I mean, they've got this amazing RPO quarterback. Nick Saban's going to RPO it like nobody's business. I mean, this guy's a running back playing quarterback, essentially. I talked to JT Daniels, high school coach, who also coached the Alabama quarterback. And he's a really special guy. So, yeah, you know, you wonder about the Crimson Tide and how they play offense will affect the SEC.
A couple of other issues that are bedeviling the people involved in intercollegiate athletics. First, the transfer portal. Where is the SEC on this?
Yeah, you know, from what I understand, they've kind of come out ahead collectively. We're talking basketball now. There's over 1,400 Division I players in the transfer portal, Paul. There were 347 teams that played basketball last year. That's an average of more than four players per team. You got more than 60 guys, you know, from the SEC that have left school. I know at Georgia, there's a complete makeover. Their point guard, Sabir Wheeler, went into the portal. He set a record, school record for assists. So there's a lot of makeovers going on right now in the SEC. Collectively, the SEC probably coming out ahead. I mean, the SEC has really bolstered, really grown in basketball. You just take a look around the league at the coaches and the talent that they have. And it's a very impressive league. I think it's only going to get more impressive. I'm not a fan of the portal because right now, Paul, with the COVID-19 extra year of eligibility, you've got more kids in the portal than there are scholarships available. So the scary thing is that a kid could leave a scholarship position, go in the portal, and not return and get another scholarship. And, you know, to me, that's kind of what's lost in the shuffle is there are going to be some kids that are going to go in this portal and not come out. with the scholarship, and that's not good for the student athlete. Eventually, I think it evens out, but right now it's a bit helter-skelter and not really sure what direction the SEC is going to go when it comes to, do you need to sit out a year to transfer within the SEC? I can see pros and cons to that, right? You can say, hey, if you go to the SEC, you know, you don't get to go to another SEC school without sitting out a year. That would probably stem a lot of the recruiting that these schools might be doing against one another. But it also might deter incoming prospects saying, well, I don't want to go to an SEC school if they're going to restrict me. So Greg Sankey, as athletic directors and presidents, has some really important decisions to make here in the next few weeks.
They do. And it's going to be fascinating. A couple of other things. We'll get to NIL last, but the CFP, it was a week ago. We had Bill Hancock on here. Kirby talked about it. Saban talked about it as well. Others will continue to talk about it. What are you saying about it?
Well, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall. I mean, I know Bill Hancock has said, hey, absolutely, positively not going to expand the season in the next 2 years. You know, I thought Coach Saban made a really compelling argument about the bowl system and how many other schools benefit from that and how you don't really want to, you know, kill the golden goose. I'm a proponent maybe for a mild expansion, but not to the extent, Paul, that it affects the regular season. See, I'm okay with expansion provided that you have locked in spots that make that conference championship game matter, right? For example, the five Power Five conference championship game winners are in. You find a way to get a group of five game in, a group of five team in. Obviously, you've got to have some Notre Dame provision. They found a way to force Notre Dame into the playoffs last year when they didn't deserve it. So they're going to find some provision to keep Notre Dame in the mix if they win 11 or 12 games, regardless of whether they're one of the four best. But I don't want to see it go crazy, because the beauty of college football, and I know that the lunatic fringe may not appreciate this, they tune in for the college football playoff every year and go, this isn't big enough. Well, you know what? There's the rest of us that enjoy the regular season and recognize that every weekend is a playoff. That it does matter what happens. You can't have a bad Saturday. That game between LSU and Florida with the shoe toss, I mean, it was a fantastic football game because it mattered, because it factored into the college football playoff championship race. You know, if you have too many teams in the playoff, it's a game you shrug off and say, eh, it doesn't mean much. So I don't want to see the playoffs expanded to the point that it waters down what I believe is the best regular season in any sport.
Finally, the NIL question is coming to a head. What do you hear? And especially, I mean, Georgia's been in the news a lot about it. Where are we and where do you see it going?
Well, right now, I know Georgia's hired a company. I think the same company works with LSU in South Carolina to work with these schools and kind of educate these kids on, hey, you know, here's how you market yourself. Here's some background on social media. Here's how it works with a contract. Suddenly, you're asking these players to not only manage themselves through their classroom schedule, their workout schedule, and their training room schedule, but now they need to manage themselves as their own brand. Social media, do they do their own press releases? How does this change things? And then the other question you have, Paul, is how valuable is a kid without that G on his helmet or without that Gators logo behind him? I think it's going to be a wake-up call for some kids, and they're going to find out their value is closely attached to the school. Now, there's an exception to every rule. Certainly every conference has their share of superstars, but to what degree, to what extent? And then the second thing is, how do coaches manage this? You want a kid to come in and feel like, hey, you're going to get every opportunity at school A or school B that you'd get elsewhere. So does that mean that there's more accessibility for this kid to speak his mind, to do press conferences? Does it play a role in recruiting? You know, for example, you look at Georgia now, Atlanta, the seventh largest metro area. Is that a big advantage for Georgia, that a lot of these kids could be marketable in the Atlanta area or for Florida? This certainly has all those major metropolitan areas, most notably Jacksonville, 70 miles away, Orlando, not too far either, Tampa for that matter. So you wonder, does the rich get richer, and how does it affect the schools that are near the big markets? Do they have an advantage because of the pending NIL legislation?
Always great stuff from Mike Griffith. Mike, we have missed you. We're glad you're back. And let's continue this conversation soon.
You bet, Paul. Thanks.
Mike Griffith, some great conversations there. And we will get your reaction to that. John Wilner in a few minutes. Mentioned, don't forget, Wednesday, a number of guests from the region's tradition in Birmingham. Your phone call is right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
And we're back. Scott is up next in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Paul. How you doing, man?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I just want to make a comment on Mike Griffith. I'm not a big fan of his, but today I have to say he made more sense today than I've ever heard him say. But
I agree. I can't think of anything that Mike said that would give anyone indigestion. That's usually not the case.
No, he seemed to be pretty straightforward all the way down the list.
Do we know whether Mike was at home or was he being held at gunpoint?
I seen his arms moving, so he wasn't tied up.
I don't know about you, but I thought I saw a bayonet right out of the corner of this the left side of the screen there.
Listen, I want to ask you something. I used to work at the paper here in Knoxville.
Yeah.
And did you ever work for the Sentinel here?
No. I always wanted to. I, of course, during college, read it every day. And I will tell you, there was one interlude about 9 years after I left Knoxville. I happened to be in Gatlinburg, and the editor of the paper gave me a ride back to the airport in Knoxville. And they had just had an opening. They had just let somebody go. And we talked about it. I don't think I was quite ready for it, for a while I wondered whether I should have gone, but I'm glad I did what I did. But I always wanted to work in Knoxville covering the Vols. That was my dream in college.
Right. Yeah, I retired there. I worked 37 years there. But
did
I
you really?
The amount of work.
Wow.
I worked on the presses.
Sure. People don't understand this now, Scott, but, that Sunday Knoxville News Sentinel back in the day, we used to, as students, wait down at Sam and Andy's for it to be dropped off. I mean, at midnight on Saturday night, which at the time was early for me. Now it seems pretty late, but that was a big deal.
Yeah, that was a fire edition. That's right now, yeah. Well, listen, Paul, I'll let you go.
When did you retire from the paper?
2008.
Well, you saw the heyday. I don't need to tell you. I mean, you were there. I got to Knoxville in the mid 70s, and there was nothing. That paper ran the town. You know that.
Right. I started in January of 62.
Yeah. You saw it all. I mean, this is going to be a newspaper conversation here, but when did they make the switch from the press? What year?
If you mean change it from letter press to plexo?
Right.
That was an in-house conversion. That was probably, I can be honest with you, I'm not really sure. It was probably in the 80s, but right. I'm not sure.
Yeah, everything in the newspaper business changed. I mean, you have to remember, computers were barely visible in a newspaper newsroom until the early 80s, and everything changed. I mean, it was, you know it better than I do because you started, but it was a complex thing printing that newspaper.
Right. Yeah, they sent me to Germany when they to learn that press. It's an offset press now that they're printing on. It's a man rolling press, but they sent us to Germany to learn some on that and work on it.
Well, thank you very much, and Scott, we're up against the top of the hour. Thanks for sharing that story. Takes me back to the old days. We're coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.